session. I want to start by asking audience members to please silence your electronic devices. For those presenting today, please turn your mic on when you begin speaking and off when you've completed your remarks. For all presenters, please state your name for the record before speaking or responding to questions. The chair is going to be here. She has asked us to start the meeting and proceed until she can arrive. And I want to notice that Commissioner Jones-Dixon will be at a certain point transitioning from being here with us to virtual, but still be with us, but just virtual. So with that, this morning, we are having a work session on Preschool for All, the indexing proposal. And so I'm just gonna jump in. I thought it might be useful to provide some context about leading up to today and why we have a proposal before us before jumping into the proposal, if that's okay. And I wanna welcome either the counties, either Eric or Jeff, if at any point in time, you can just come on up here because I'm sure you'll be needed to answer any sort of technical questions or just how things might have an impact. So some history leading up to today, because there's been a lot of discussion like why all of a sudden there's an indexing proposal in August. And just some history is that last year, the chair advanced a resolution to delay the increase that was scheduled to take effect in the tax for the preschool. And as part of that discussion on the resolution to delay the increase of the tax, I offered an amendment relating to indexing. And I offered the indexing proposal because I viewed it from my perspective as a technical fix to make the tax less regressive. It's pretty standard in federal, state, and local taxes, and that we had just come off a period of very high, actually record inflation. So I offered that. We had a pretty robust discussion, and on a 2-2 vote, it did not advance. The underlying resolution to delay the implementation of the rate increase did pass, and so that was delayed. We also had a pretty robust discussion at the time about the technical advisory group and when it was gonna be convened, because actually we voted on the delay without having sort of the insights from the technical advisory group. I say there was a pretty robust discussion at the time by the commission about the sort of moving ahead without their recommendations or insights from them. It's the technical advisory group is convened by the chair, and so it was noted they would be convened. And then in April and in June, I submitted an APR for the consideration. Again, I viewed it primarily as a technical fix to adjust for inflation. I submitted an APR to index the thresholds, and again, waiting for the tag. Following that, the day that the budget passed, the commission was informed that the governor and the chair had been having pretty lengthy discussions about the tax overall, not specifically about indexing, but the tax overall, and that there had been a letter sent from the governor, and following that, the chair responded in her individual capacity as the chair to the governor, in which she said, "I'm confident the board can identify consensus around possible next steps to index the income threshold. We know that indexing and therefore tax relief in the 2026 tax year would be responsive to our current regional economic landscape." So that's from her letter back to the governor. So why are we today here in August? So certainly after that, the tag was convened. Based on feedback that I had received from community members, but also from technical experts and also from some commissioners, I withdrew the APR that I had submitted and have slightly modified the indexing proposal, I believe, to maintain that it maintains its progressivity in terms of the highest payers, but also recognizing that individuals are being pushed into a tax bracket solely based on the levels of inflation we have had. So just some background about why we are here in August with a indexing proposal. And I should also mention this is like not at all connected to all the other proposals swirling about, because those, as have been indicated, will be reviewed by the technical advisory group, will receive input from them, and I'm assuming have a robust discussion. So just providing some context, since I was the only person here last year when we had the previous discussion about it. So with that, I am gonna pass around two things. One, a just, you know, brief two-pager. And I'm just gonna ask staff whether this has been posted also, so everybody else has the benefit of, I think, to hopefully explain in plain English what is a fairly technical fix, and maybe at this point I might also ask, I'm just anticipating you're going to be needed, Jeff and Eric, to come forward, and Brian, if you also would like to come forward. In addition, we have a draft ordinance, and would people like me to distribute the draft ordinance? Yeah. I'm happy to do that. But I'm not seeing the draft ordinance in this packet.
Commissioner Brim Edwards, when you say the draft ordinance, you're talking about a proposed amendment that you intend making, or the one that's posted?
This is the revised, yes. So. The revised one.
Okay, so just for the record, the Board of County Commissioners has online an ordinance that is to be considered at Thursday's meeting. Commissioner Brim Edwards has identified some changes to that ordinance to better reflect her intent, and then so she will, I think, anticipate submitting this as an amendment on Thursday, but this is for consideration and discussion now, if that makes sense.
So, and I will just state for the record what is being circulated and what will be offered tomorrow is actually reflective of the intent of what we offered. There was some drafting issues, but this and what's been represented of what's going to be offered, I think now the ordinance reflects what we've said is going to be offered. So just as background, this specific proposal looks at the two thresholds that we currently have that trigger the filing, and it adjusts for inflation. It uses an inflation index that the county uses for other purposes, and makes an adjustment for the filers, both at the individual and for joint filers. As I mentioned the other day, does not have the rebasing or the catch-up amount. That benefit or that the new threshold does not apply to the highest income taxpayers. So they will still stay at 125 and 200. And I'm wondering if you want Jeff or Eric provide from a technical standpoint how this would play out.
Can I just clarify, Commissioner? We already have this that you handed out today is different than what has already been posted. And is that correct? And are those changes easily identifiable?
Do you want to walk through what they are?
For the record, Eric Ariano, Chief Financial Officer, and Commissioner Singleton, I would walk through the ordinance and specific changes is to walk through this change is technically pretty difficult. It's hard to follow. I'd prefer to kind of walk through the proposed version, the revised proposed version, and just make the distinctions with the old one, if that's okay. And it's not because I don't want to walk through it. It's just it's layered, and I assure you, Jeff and myself reviewed it multiple times, and we made sure we work with the county attorneys to make sure that the intent that Commissioner Brent Matters wanted was incorporated into the language that's before you.
And maybe just the
yep. Oh.
I think the plain English, you can provide the, yep. like the yep. financial, but the plain English is that the drafted version had the highest income earners getting the rebased threshold. And this is actually saying, you don't get the rebased threshold, you're back to the, you start paying at 125 and 200. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'll walk through the proposed version, the revised proposed version, and a little bit of this will be repetitive, but I think it is important. And Jeff, please correct me if I miss something or I'm incorrect in something, but as Commissioner Brandmeier said, this proposal essentially would implement indexing starting in tax year 2026 forward. And so if approved by the board, not only would this index for starting 2026, it would automatically get indexed every year based on a CPI metric that's identified in the tax code, the proposed tax code. The other element that I think is key that Commissioner Brandmeier's talked about was that which I refer to as rebasing. This also rebases, which says, hey, we're doing indexing from 2026 forward, but we also had multiple tax years since the inception of this was in tax year 2021, where we did not index the threshold based on any metric. It was just a fixed amount and it just went forward. So the rebasing essentially catches us up for all those years that we did not adjust the threshold. So it's a catch up and then indexing moving forward. So the visual that was provided, this one here, there's these tables here that show essentially what it is current from left to right, what it currently is for single filers and joint filers based upon the first tier and then the second tier. And just again, for complete clarity, is existing tax code says that single filers, the threshold is 125, for joint filers is 200,000. And so what that means is Oregon taxable income that exceeds those thresholds gets taxed at 1.5%. And I wanna be clear, that's Oregon taxable income. So if you were to actually look at your Oregon tax form and look at line 19 in 2024, it's actually after your standard deduction and itemized deductions if you choose to do that. So I just wanted to clarify that piece. And then under the existing tax code, then there's a second tier, which is if for single filers, if you're above 250, and then for joint filers, if you're above 400, you're essentially added an additional 1.5% tax, which is 3% on any above that, yeah. And so that's current state. So to the right of that is essentially all those income thresholds adjusted for essentially rebased and then would be indexed moving forward. And that's based on, like Commissioner Brimmer said, a CPI metric that the county does use for our COLA, for example. And we also use it for our business income tax code. So that's just kind of a clear baseline in terms of current versus what the indexing and rebasing does. Now move into the specifics of the proposal, which I think we've we've tagged as modified indexing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner, I think we're tagging it as modified indexing.
Can I just ask, did we, is it possible to get the same table and numbers if we did indexing without rebasing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can do that. We have a version of that. We can provide that.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. So that wouldn't be rebasing. It's just if we just index for the next year.
Yep.
Okay. So now moving into the modified indexing, and I like this visual that was prepared on the bottom here, which Brian prepared. Yeah, I think me and Jeff were talking about it verbally. And we're like, this is the best way to do this is visually, but it makes a lot more sense. And so if I was, and this is just for simplicity, if, because we have joint filers, right? But let's just assume there's a resident and it's a single filer, okay? And so the first box at the very top is, and there's a couple tests I'm going to run through just to try to explain it, is if a taxpayer is trying to determine whether they owe preschool for all tax or not, your first test is your Oregon taxable income above $153,000? And that is, again, the rebased indexed amount based on the proposal, right? So if your income is below $153,000, you do not owe preschool for all income tax. And that would be different based on the current threshold, right? And so now if your income, taxable income is above $153,000, then you go to a second test. Because at that point, you owe the tax, but you're trying to determine at what rate, right? And so the second test is you're above $153,000, but are you below $307,000? Which is the single filer threshold for the second tier. So it's the tier where you start getting taxed at 3%. So if your income is above $153,000 but less than $307,000, if that's the case, then you're gonna be taxed at 1.5% on taxable income above $153,000. Okay? So in that case, to Commissioner Benner's description is that those individuals in that tier would get a benefit from the indexing and the rebasing, again, based on only cost of living adjustments, okay? Now, if your taxable income is, again, above 307, this is where I think it does change, right? So if your income for a single filer is above 307,000, to determine your tax, it'll revert back to the original tax thresholds, not the rebased index thresholds. So if I'm an individual that's slightly above 307, I'd be taxed 1.5% on any income from 125 to 250, which is the first tier based on the original thresholds. And then I'd be taxed at 3% for anything above 250, again, original thresholds. So what this proposal does, essentially, anybody that's on that second tier, based on their rebasing indexing, would get no benefit. They'd always be paying what they currently pay. But anybody below that would get benefit from the rebasing indexing. And we would obviously adjust, again, all the thresholds every year if their proposal was approved, so that 307 for single filer would grow every year over time. So that's the modified indexing proposal. Now the change from the revised proposal versus what was currently noticed is that originally we had, if we increase the thresholds like displayed in this table, but under that previous code, essentially not only would the second tier revert back, the first tier would also revert back. So under that mechanism, it would only individuals that were pushed into owing preschool for all tax based on just cost of living would essentially benefit, and any taxpayers that were in the first tier that were pushed into the second tier because of cost of living would essentially benefit from that. That's the distinction between the currently noticed versus the proposed modified version that before you today. So hopefully that made sense in terms of the proposal. Jeff, if you want to add anything or.
For the record, I'm Jeff Renfro, he, him from the budget office. I'll just say Eric and I spent a lot of time talking about this, and even for us, it was complicated. So please feel free to ask us questions, or if you want to give us, if you want us to give additional examples, we'd be happy to do that.
To be clear, there's lots of indexing in all kinds of tax codes. It's not that complicated. Again, it's just like a new number gets put in generally for the thresholds. What does make it slightly more complicated is this, the modification which takes away the rebasing for the highest income earners.
Thank you.
Otherwise, it's just a standard indexing.
I appreciate it, and part of why I was asking the question is I've already read this other one and gone through it, and so to have to try and figure out what's different based on underlines is tedious. So I appreciate the overview. Thank you.
Are we just asking questions?
Yeah, it's just
open.
There's
open season.
Not a lot of
Jeff and Eric.
questions is, I say, it's a draft proposal. Like I say, I tried to, you know, basically in discussions with a lot of community members and trying to reserve the progressivity of it, which is why it became modified and slightly more complicated. But also, the reason I put it forward is if the decision is made not to index, it actually becomes a more regressive code because people are being pushed into the bracket to pay the tax, not necessarily because of increased purchasing power or income, but solely because of inflation. And you know, my sense is like just looking at the inflation charts is, you know, we had at least, well, since I'm old, in my lifetime, we have had other periods of a 7% inflation, but for a lot of individuals, it's been 30 years since we had a 7%, a really high level of inflation. So that's why I just brought the proposal forward as a way to sort of recognize that really people haven't had an increase in purchasing power, but they're being pushed into paying the tax. Again, this is focused on that first increment of taxpayers pushed into paying that tax because of inflation.
So this will be a surprise to nobody. Did the program get the opportunity to look at financial scenarios and impact of programming based on this modified proposal that we're hearing today? Or am I to assume that the impacts to the program are similar to what we saw the last time when we had, maybe 2 weeks ago, the briefing that you shared some of that modeling?
We've updated the analysis to reflect this specifically, and I can talk about that. The program hasn't taken those specific revenue impacts and come up with a plan for how the program would change as a result of it. Go ahead.
A clarifying question to that. Is the revenue impact one in which the department would have to come up with programmatic structural changes in order to adapt to the revenue stream? Like, is this have really no impact, or would we, in order to stay solvent, need to look at the structure of the program if we move forward with this proposal?
Yeah, so let me try to give the nuanced response to that, and then you can tell me to try to just like be direct.
Also note, just before we begin, in the packet of materials tomorrow, there is a new chart that you can also see, and that chart was created based on the intent of the proposal, which is the redrafted ordinance.
Yeah, so the graph and the summary table of the impact, and the materials that are posted for tomorrow are correct. And so let me start from the start on the costing, and then I'll get to your answering your question. So I want to make just like a technical note at first. If you look at what we're considering the baseline for tax year 22 and 23, and sorry, I'll look this way too, they just asked the question. if you look at those numbers and say, this is different than what we actually collected in this year, it's because in order to make a fair comparison, what I did is I stripped out all of the revenue associated with like penalty and interest payments that wouldn't be impacted by this. So then I went back to the tax returns and I looked just at the like adjusted income that would be subject to the indexing, and I essentially redid everyone's taxes for them for 22 and 23. And then the middle column is, there's only one in this one. Okay. There is a different version of this table where I also did just standard indexing, right, and recalculated everyone's taxes for standard indexing, which is similar to what we've seen and talked about in the past. And then what's in the table there is implementing this modified indexing proposal. And basically what happens is it takes the impact of indexing and it cuts it in half. And the reason for that is the financial impact of indexing is really, for any individual taxpayer, it's a pretty small uniform adjustment for all of them. It's just a small adjustment times 38,000 filers, and then every year you get another adjustment, so it compounds over time. So it adds up to something potentially large. So when we cut it in half, and then if you look at the new fund balance graph, right now our baseline scenario is that the fund balance dips below zero in the mid-2030s. So it would suggest something has to change before we get there, even in our baseline scenario. So with the modified indexing, it takes that fund balance deficit and it pushes it lower, but just not as low as the normal indexing scenario where we've already shared that analysis in the past. So I think it's enough that the program would have to make additional adjustments before we got there, but just not as severe as a normal indexing scenario.
Do you have more than just 2 years of revenue? I mean, I know the graph does, but I don't know what slide that is.
It just is slide 10.
Yeah.
So
could you provide looking out further?
We could. The reason we're only reporting on those 2 years is so indexing wouldn't have an impact on the first year of the tax, and then we wanted to look at like what would have actually happened.
Why would it not have an impact on the first year?
Oh,
because you
retro.
Start. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, oh no, it's not that it's retro. It's so if we're thinking about what would we expect the annual impact of indexing to be, the thought was, well, let's look at the 2 years of the tax where it, if we had been indexing, what would the financial impact have been? To get us like a ballpark that we can then push
forward.
So
that's actually a retro number.
This is a retro number, but it's based on actuals. So in my mind, I'm trying to always like come back to like, what is real data I can tie this to? This proposal wouldn't have a retro element, so the catching up or rebasing the threshold is different than having a retroactive impact. It wouldn't have an impact in 2021 because that was the first year of the tax, so you're establishing the baseline. And then in 22, if we had indexed according to this proposal, I calculate what the impact would have been, do the same thing for 23 to get a sense of the magnitude we would expect. And then to create the updated fund balance graph, we're taking like, okay, I'm assuming these are like two typical years, even though they're like pretty different from each other. And saying the average of this is more or less what we'd expect, and there's like a little bit of adjustment in the out years. But under this proposal, we would expect an impact, something like this going forward. And then I build that impact into our baseline revenue numbers and just push it out into the future.
Okay. And that's in the graph, not like you don't.
I have the numbers to make the graph.
Can I actually see it?
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Is it, now that we're making graphs, is it possible to compare this versus status quo?
Yeah, I already have a version of that,
okay,
so yeah,
just, that's I'm easy trying, to show. Because I know it also dips, so.
Yep.
It's sort of the same sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, for me, there's this, and maybe this is the way to get at it, but what do we project the cost of the program to be when we're at Universal? Feels like a missing piece of this conversation. Because the fund balance dipping is different than what we actually, what we might be collecting. And you, this is about the fund balance, not about what we collect that year. And so there's just a missing component of what is the actual nexus between not having additional savings that we're using and the actual cost of the program.
So like, what is the magnitude of our shortfall in those years?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, we have all of those assumptions, so we can provide that.
I want to make sure I know what you're asking first. I think this is what I'm interested in too, is basically like, what are we assuming the cost of the program would be, for instance? What are we assuming the revenues would be? And then, obviously, the graph does show then how much of the fund balance we would use to make up that delta. But like, having those other two pieces of information, what's the assumed revenues coming in and what's the assumed cost of the program will help paint the complete picture. Okay.
This is also why last year I brought up this issue and I brought it up again this time of like, this chart is just not, to get to the answer of what is the program cost, there's no way that we're gonna have a flat, like the enrollment is gonna be the same. And this is why getting the demographic projections and getting them, like, it's disappointing that between last year and now we haven't had a more rigorous look at the demographic projections, because I feel like this chart could say something very different actually if the demographics are different. And I know it's based on like the saturation level of how many people are going to use it. That is a projection, but we can get access and we should have access to better demographic information than we just think it's going to be flat through FY39, because that is not at all what the PSU is telling other educational entities about population in Multnomah County.
And that's
a criticism of either one. It's just from a programmatic standpoint, it's really important to also inform, because it's all about inputs, about how much the program costs, and we should have a better understanding of actually how many students we and 3- and 4-year-olds we anticipate and where they are in the county.
And the demographic parts are going to be, or the demographic pieces that the commissioner is referring to, is that's part of the TAGS work that they're going to be looking at, and I believe that is September, that they're going to be looking at more demographic information. That's the last I heard, but that might not be correct.
I believe the idea is originally when it wasn't kind of in two phases, the idea was to have an educational portion at the beginning, and that was going to include having the Population Research Center people come present. So now some of the educational pieces we haven't done yet in August, we're going to do in September. So the idea is to start that process in September, but I don't think anything is scheduled officially yet.
Okay. So something that, I mean, this is more of like a math question than a policy question, but it just, the way that this is structured with the modified indexing liability, it seems like if you have a taxable income over $307,000 or the $991 for joint tax filers, like if somebody's making $307,000 or has $307,000 of taxable income and somebody else has $306,999 of taxable income, that's actually like a big, because of the modified projection, it's going to be a big difference in tax liability. Is that right? Okay.
And Jeff and I had this discussion about, again, trying to... And I think I want to use the word benefit, because frankly, people are just treading that's not a benefit, it's just they're treading water. They're not advancing if you look at real and constant dollars. But the question of, like, who should, I don't want to use the analogy because, like, the treading water, it's like if somebody's not treading water, that's the bad outcome. But of where to draw that line, and the decision was made, there was a suggestion that maybe the natural place to make that separation of who gets to go back to go back to the 125 and who doesn't was at a point that had already been established in the ballot measure, which was, I mean, there already is a big difference when you go from the 1.5 to the 3. It's a pretty significant increase, and it seemed like this naturally just followed that what was already in the measure as a natural dividing point of which tax filers would go back to the original 125 and who would have the rebase number, and the ones that don't go back to the ones who don't get the rebase number are those who are the highest income filers. But it was trying to use the structure that already existed as the natural point to make that division.
Can I ask a question? So going back from the first tax year and indexing for the population this proposal would index, and then applying that to the upcoming tax year versus if we started indexing today, moving forward, can I assume that basically where the graph goes like that, we would just like bump that over? I don't know what the difference would be financially of, like, I'm gonna say, what year do we go negative and how deep do we go negative? You know, is that just pushing it out a few years, or does it fundamentally change the curve? I'm
don't do rebasing.
Yeah, if we don't rebase based off of the first year, but began it. I'm trying to understand the levers and what it's.
So it would, if we did the metro method, I'll just call it, of like we're starting right now and we're just going to do normal indexing. If you imagine it as what it does to the fund balance curve, it would just. I think you're exactly right, and I think it's the right way to say it. It would just push it out a little bit, because we would. Essentially, what we're assuming is that the impact of modified indexing reduces the amount of revenue we collect in every year by like 2.1, 2.5, depending on kind of when we're talking about it. In this proposal with the rebasing, we kind of get the impact of all of those years right away, and then we're building from that larger impact. In the other case, we would just start the $2.1 million impact in 26, and then we would be building from there. So we'd get to the same place. It would just shift the timing by 3 years or four years. Yeah.
It also would, I'm just looking at, I think it would be different if we had years with much lower levels of inflation, but we had really record levels of inflation. So that did, again, push. And I'm just saying, I know, depending on where you work, most people did not get wage increases that met using this CPI West size Class A second half. In 2023, it was 6.03. In 2024, it was 7.60. In 2025, 3.28. and 2026 2.42. So if you did like what Metro did, it'd just be saying, we know a lot of inflation occurred, just that's too bad. And again, by capturing it, it actually makes the tax less regressive.
I don't know that we would be saying that's too bad. I think this is a policy discussion and not just a tax discussion. And so I totally understand and appreciate what you're saying, but I don't want to make assumptions about what it means that we're telling the public, because for me, it's not that it's too bad, but it may be that my policy decision is the impact on the program is too significant for me to agree with that rebasing. And that I just want to be careful about the assumptions under that.
Yeah, that's why I read the numbers, just so you would know. And that's like everybody can make their own call on whether inflation. But I just wanted to share the facts. So that Metro made a decision, like, despite those levels of inflation, to not start another level. And they also have a much lower rate than the county does for the SHS taxes. Much could be significantly lower than the county's preschool rate.
The other thing I want to comment on, I think obviously the tax piece is really important, and then the revenue impacts, and then impacts the program. I think to a lesser extent, obviously, implementation in terms of the tax changes, but I do think it's something to consider, and so I wanted to kind of share some information on that. And I think what triggered me is this, the question that you had, Commissioner Moyer, around the Metro's change. Obviously, through this process, we've been, considering the technical aspects of implementation, and the City of Portland administers our tax, and talking to the city around, if we did this, how could we do this? And so, we've had those conversations with them at Dept, and I think the thing I really want to stress here is that this does add a level of complexity to the tax structure. That would have to be considered in terms of system configuration for the city, changing their forms. And I think the aspect of we're pushing into 2026 helps with some of that timing. But the reality is that most of our taxpayers, they either have withholding through their employer, they make quarterly payments, or they rely on their tax software to help them with the process. So. And I think there's a range of taxpayers, some that just have their CPAs do it, they don't worry about it. But the reality, there's also people that don't have CPAs that do it that, again, are relying on themselves manually or through tax software. So this does inject some complexity to it. So I think if we were to actually, the board were to take this forward, we would have to do a ton of outreach, communication, education with the taxpayer. A base so they understand the change, and because even if we did a really good job around that, there's probably going to be people that are frustrated, confused, and it's just a reality of taxes. Even when you have simple tax structures, that's just what happens when there's a change or a new tax. So I just wanted to be very clear about that if that happens, that would probably be there, and I think we would do what we can to make sure we have a good communication plan, work with the city around implementation. Around those things, and it's not just working with taxpayers; it's working with CPAs, working with payroll companies, working with taxware software companies. We'd have to do all that outreach.
So, be clear, though, if you're paying the 1.5%, the number's just changing. Which happens all throughout the tax code,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So it's just a new. Number that's plugged in for the 1.5%. So maybe the added complexity, which again, I think most people who are at $500,000, this isn't a huge change. And say most people would have either accountants or be using some sort of tax software, but for that first bracket, it's just a change in the number that just gets plugged in, and I'm not sure what sort of complexity that adds, like the because numbers change for everything that's indexed already changes every year.
Yep.
So it's just another number that changes every year, right?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say there's, I think when we're in the numbers, it's, you get to it, it's pretty straightforward, but the reality is not all people are in the tax sphere all the time and understanding. So it does add some complexity that I think I just wanted to be clear that we need to anticipate and make sure that we're preparing for. And I'm not saying it's not definitely not possible to do a good job around that. I just wanted to make that point. The other thing is and the chair knows this because you really supported on this effort, that helping to push for tax software companies to incorporate not only Preschool for All, but supportive housing into their software. And we made a lot of progress there. And when you implement taxes, you can't force a company to incorporate. You can't. You just do outreach, and you hope that with consumer base that they add it. And so we made some good progress there, and some of the most used taxware softwares actually incorporated in tax year, the last tax year, which was a really good progress. I even used it myself because I wanted to test it out, and it was really nifty. So I think with any change here, we would obviously push for them to incorporate this change, but there's no guarantee that they do it, right? And so doing it with a runway is always good, but there's no guarantee they're gonna do it the next year. There's no guarantee they're gonna do it long-term, right? I hope, I think they probably could, but again, I'm just pointing out things that we need to consider in terms of a potential change that adds some complexity. So I think they can do it. But it's something to consider. The other thing I'll final, my final point is just the work that with the city. It's very preliminary, but I think they noticed that because we have a provision in our tax agreement that says that if there's a material change to how the tax is administered, and it's materially different from Metro, because we try to maintain conformity with their personal income tax, that it could trigger them to potentially increase our cost of our IGA for administration. And so they noted that based on their understanding of this, that that could potentially happen, but is very preliminary in terms of that. So just something again that I wanted to point out in terms of consideration.
Thanks for that. So do we know my understanding is that the major software tax software programs do have SHS and Preschool for All for next tax year already built in. And they're able, I don't know if you know this, but are they able to incorporate some of the changes that Metro has done around indexing?
My understanding is that I think they are, because it's just, they're just adjusting the threshold, which is pretty straightforward based on that indexing. So, but again, I haven't talked to them directly about it, but yeah.
Okay. And then I think while we're talking about potential changes that impact the next tax year, are there any other things that we should be considering as a board that you might recommend as changes for the next tax year?
Oh, additional?
Yeah.
For preschool. Thanks. Actually, thank you, Chair, because there's an additional piece in the code that I think with the indexing kind of gets missed. But there's another element in the ordinance that both the original and this one that are intact is that I'm recommending this as well as the Metro, when they made their recent adjustment for tax year 2026, not only did that index moving forward, but we have a provision in our tax codes that essentially, and this is from the onset of the tax, that if your tax liability in a particular tax year exceeds $1,000, you're required to make quarterly payments or have withholding. And that is not a unique thing. The state does that. It's pretty normal with tax structures. So what Metro did is they increased that starting next tax year from $1,000 to $5,000. So again, if if, and that's in the code, proposing change from 1,000 to 5,000. So under that, beginning in tax year 2026, if your liability is above $5,000, you'd be required to make quarterly payments or have withholding. So it definitely pushes, you know, I guess it, a lot of taxpayers that are below that would not have to do that withholding or quarterly payments. And I think the main purpose behind that is there's been, through the implementation, there's been, even though it's gotten better, there's been a lot of taxpayers that have not withheld the right amount or haven't made payments or withheld at all. And then they run into, I have penalties and interest, and being frustrated about that, right? Especially when they're not aware of the tax. Again, we've done a much better in terms of communication, knowing about the tax, where I think that's been diminished. But I think the big push for Metro is to essentially help with that. And so, you know, I think if to maintain conformity, because I think having a situation where a taxpayer is having to withhold for us but not Metro could create some frustrated taxpayers. And this has no revenue impact, no revenue impact at all. Doesn't decrease revenue. But what it does is collections throughout the year will be a little bit less, and the money will come in after April, if that makes sense. So thank you, Chair. I completely forgot about that. That is another proposed change. Aside from that, those are the two pieces.
And that's on the very last page, on the very last section of the proposed ordinance in front of us.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, because my question was, what's the problem we're solving for here? So thanks for that explanation.
Do any employers who know based on salary and standard deduction, I don't know if they know marital status or not, do payroll deduction for this tax?
So under our tax code, except for the first year that we implemented, we did not require it, but the second year of the tax, we required employers to essentially offer withholding. And so the difficult part with that, and we run into that situation here at Multnomah County, we don't know an individual's tax situation, because if they're married, they're not married, where they live, you know, all that stuff of their partner, that may come into consideration. We don't know their situation, so you can't really tell them this is what you should withhold. We do have steps to help them determine what's the right amount. And so I think when we implement this tax, I think we had if you make above 200,000, then you probably should withhold, to make sure that we're kind of had that sweet spot of making sure that we're protecting taxpayers into a situation where they actually have a penalty or interest or under withhold. And so we do have that in our tax code. But again, it's difficult because we don't know each individual taxpayer's situation.
Okay, any other questions for Jeff or Eric? Okay, all right. Thank you both.
I guess one. There's some of the material you said you have already. Is that stuff that we'll be able to get today or before the vote tomorrow?
Yes, I'll go upstairs and I'll prep it as quickly as I can. It's either going to be before 2 or if I don't get it to you by 2 later.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Thank you. Please don't. Yeah. Please eat lunch. Please take care of yourself, and it would be great to have before we vote tomorrow.
All right.
Just to be clear, the vote tomorrow is to put something out as for and into public comment. So, if it's not by voting tomorrow, it's basically moving into the public comment period. It's not approving the final.
So
it's a two-part. You have a first and second reading, so it's not right.
We do have, this does require first and second reading. We will have public comments on the first reading tomorrow, as we do with all board items.
But it's not the for briefings. Implementation.
Oh. Yeah, it is to move it forward to the second reading. Yes. All right. Thank you. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate all the work on this. Anything else, any further discussion folks want to have on this before tomorrow?
Well, I guess just one thing I do want to appreciate the department for getting some questions turned around really fast yesterday. So just want to make sure to say that out loud because that was really quick work and I appreciate you getting it done.
Fantastic work. All right, anything else? Great. There being no further business, we are having a public listening session on Preschool for All. That will be here in this room starting at 6 p.m. We do have, I believe we are full on public testimony that we will hear, but folks can, of course, continue to submit written testimony, and we will have a half hour of public comment for the agenda item tomorrow.
Is it possible, and I know it's not our standard practice, although I would love to get to a place of this, that when people submit testimony, that be put on in a folder on the web, like the materials?
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to aim for, and I would love to see that as well. So we can work on that.
So one thing that if we're going to, I think it's a great practice, one thing we might want to do is not everybody who submits something expects it to be publicly posted. I know at the school district, for example, there's a process when you submit something, you can ask whether you want to have it posted, whether you want to have it posted without your name. It just gives people the option because sometimes it thinks like I sent it to Commissioner Moyer and I didn't know it was going to be posted. Because sometimes people do get reactions to their testimony and they're like, oh, I had no idea that you were going to post it. So it might just be
it's not things that are sent to us.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think, so just, I'm familiar with OLIS, right? So are you down at the state where any testimony that is submitted for a bill at the legislature automatically becomes part of the public record and is posted publicly. And I think that's what you were referring to.
Yeah, not if somebody is communicating to an office.
Yes, yeah. I guess it's just a change in practice. I think it's worthwhile.
It's taking the big folder that we get and actually making those posted publicly is what you're talking about. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Jenny, did you?
Can I just comment on that? Is the only reason why I'm suggesting it is that because if it's a change in practice, as a courtesy, that we inform people that that's going to be what we do, because this is what we ran into at the school district. People thought I'm sending in comment to the board, and I didn't know we were going to post it. And then sometimes people get pretty extreme reactions from other people about comments they posted, and so it's just this, again, like, hey, and it could be instead of having an affirmative, do you want to have this posted? It's like, you should know that we're going to post this so people are aware of that because it is a change in practice.
And I think we have an update on the work that's happening to do some of these things. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Hi. Jenny Smith, she, her pronouns, Chair's Chief of Staff. It's been a while that I've been sitting here. Been a minute. Missed you guys. So as a part of the overall Granicus overhaul, which is the back end of the board website, that drives all the posting and agenda materials. This has been contemplated. So there will certainly be notices as we change this practice. So happy to keep you in the loop on those. It's delayed slightly as Marina is on family leave, but we'll be proceeding with that. So happy to make adjustments and problem solve as we go.
Great, thank you. And then I would just say, I feel like channeling Jenny Madcore a little bit here, but anything anybody sends to our office is, of course, a public record and it's subject to disclosure, but it's not normally, but that there is a difference between sending it to us and submitting public testimony, just in terms of expectations, I think. So, thank you.
Yeah, and if they complete the form, that would be the public testimony written form, that would, I think, automatically knock it into that category.
Okay, great. So, as I said, we will have a public
listening session this evening. We will reconvene tomorrow for our regularly scheduled board meeting at 9:30. There being no further business, we are adjourned.